This message is True Christianity and the Power of God. True Christianity and the Power of God. We're going to go back because this chapter 4 in Philippians is a fantastic chapter. It is something that just ought to be graven in our hearts. We're going to start for verse 1 all the way through verse number 15. Therefore, my brethren, whom I love and yearn to see, my delight, my crown and wreath of glory, thus stand firm in the Lord, my beloved. I entreat and advise Euodia, and I entreat and advise Syntyche. Now, the word Euodia there means what? You remember?
Mr.
Hay? Euodia. Euodia means come from you and Hodos. It means good road. Or pleasant trail. And then the name Syntyche means accident. Someone who falls down a lot. Syntyche to agree and to work in harmony in the Lord. Now these two women were having trouble. And here we got this all the way to this day here today. Women still have trouble in churches. They still don't get along. And so this message is to them today. I exhort you and my genuine yoke fellow, help these two women to keep on cooperating, for they have toiled along with me in the spreading of the gospel, the good news, as have Clement and the rest of my fellow workers, whose names are in the book of life. Rejoice in the Lord always, delight, gladden yourselves in Him, and again I say rejoice. Let all men know and perceive and recognize your unselfishness, your considerateness, your forbearing spirit. The Lord is near. He is coming soon. Do not fret or have any anxiety about anything, but in every circumstance and in everything by prayer and petition and definite request, with thanksgiving, continue to make your wants known to God. List them down. Put them down. Write them down and ask God as you pray. Ask God to hear these requests. And God's peace, or the God of peace, be yours, that tranquil state of soul assured of its salvation through Christ, so fearing nothing from God and content with its earthly lot of whatever sort it is, that peace which transcends all understanding shall garrison and throw up a fort around you and guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. So many times we come to that point, don't we? When our only hope, our only anchor, our only buttress, our only wall of protection is Jesus Christ. For the ones remaining, brethren, whatever is true, osa, that's the word osa, aletheia, whatever is true, whatever is without shadow, true, genuine, whatever is worthy of reverence, is honorable and seemly, and whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely and lovable, and whatever is kind and winsome and gracious, if there is in any virtue of excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think on these things, hold your mind upon them, and weigh and take account of these things, and fix your minds on them. Set your mind on the goal. Practice what you have learned and received and heard and seen in me. Model your way of living upon it. And the God of peace, of untroubled and undisturbed well-being, will be with you. I was made very happy in the Lord that now you have revived your interest in my welfare. And after so long a time, you were indeed thinking of me, but you had no opportunity to show it. Now that I am implying that I was in any personal want, for I have learned how to be content, satisfied in the point where I am not disturbed or disquieted in whatever state I'm in. I know how to be abased and to live humbly in a straitened circumstances, and I know how to enjoy plenty and to live in abundance. I have learned in any state and in all circumstances that I am in the secret of facing every situation, whether well-fed or starving, having sufficiency or to spare or going without and being in want. I have strength for all these things in Christ who empowers me. I am ready for anything and equal to anything through Him who, unless inner strength into me, who infuses inner strength into me, that is that I am self-sufficient in Christ's sufficiency. But it is right and commendable and noble of you to contribute for my needs and to share my difficulties with me. And you, Philippians, yourselves well know that in the early days of the gospel ministry, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me and opened up a debit and credit account for me in giving and receiving except you only. Beautiful story from God's Word, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Now let's go back to verse number 9. Now we looked at verse number 8. Well, let's look at it one more time. Sharon liked that one. Sharon, one of your favorite verses. So let's go back and just look at it briefly from the Greek. To lepon adelphoi, hosa esten alithe, hosa semna, hosa dikaya, hosa agna, hosa profile, hosa euphema, etis arete, kai etis epanels, tautu logiste. And now to the rest of you, brethren. We have this word hosa there, which is a little correlative. And it looked, you can look it up on page 203 in the Analytical Greek Lexicon, by the way.
Whatever.
It's a correlative. Whatsoever things are true. We want to deal with truth, not mysticism, not legend, not superstition. Whatsoever things are serious and grave. Serious and grave. We have a person in high office today that every time that she is presented with a real problem with death, life and death, she just laughs. That's the opposite of this, to laugh. This means to be serious and grave. And so whatever just and whatsoever is pure, that word just there means righteousness. Whatever is right. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we lived in a world of justice? Where nobody was trying to rip you off, so no one was trying to cheat you in any way. No one was trying to pick your pocket or break into your house. Mm-hmm. Whatsoever is pure. That word agna there means not of earth. Whatever is unpolluted. And whatever is lovable. And that means pros and phile. That means toward love, pleasing. Winsome. You want to treat everyone like you want to be treated, and you want to spoil everyone in your life like they're the most important person in the world. I remember a long time up here in Fishtake, the Galley Go, a long time ago. There was only 52 people in this valley. 52 people in Fish Lake Valley. And it's a pretty good-sized valley. It takes you 30 or 45 minutes to drive from one end of it to the other, 60 miles an hour or more. And there were 52 people here, and people looked upon each neighbor as something precious. Precious. Because there weren't very many. precious because your life might depend upon them today or tomorrow, and their life might depend upon you today or tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Lovable and kind, whatsoever is well spoken of, honorable. No hearsay, no defamation of character, if any virtue. That word there, arete, it means all type of virtue. It means that God's splendor and might and righteousness. It means moral excellence, it means mental excellence, and it means physical excellence. The Greeks were very, very fond of exercise and physical well-being. They were strong. They had these games. They had all kinds of sports. The Olympics comes from the Greek idea of the Olympics, people competing with one another. This word here, virtue, means physical, mental, and spiritual virtue. And if any, praise. You know, praise is a form of prayer, isn't it? When you praise God, our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. We're praising God. We're thanking Him every day for what He did through Jesus Christ for us. And He prays these things you think about all the time. You calculate, you wonder about, you sleep, you dream about these things. Verse number 9 now. Ha, kai, ametete, kai, parabete, kai, akusate, kai, edete, in imoi, tauta, prosete, kai, hothios, teis, erenes, este, methimon. Now, which things both ye learned? That word there comes from manthano. Mathetes means what?
Habitual learner.
Mathetes, and this means whatsoever ye learned by daily habit. From me. Paul preached from morning till night and sometimes late at night. Preached late one night. One guy fell out of a second story building and killed himself. And then the Lord raised him up. You learn by habit. And you receive. This word received here is the same thing as you see runners in a relay and one runner runs and hands a baton to another. It's like relaying. Ye received, and ye heard. Now, I'm using the word ye here. It's an old English word, but it's very, it's true to grammar here. Because the second person plural, paralabite, and emathete, second person plural, second aorist, indicative, active, and then paralabete is second person plural, second aorist, indicative, active, and then ekousate is second person plural, first aorist, indicative, active. And now ye saw, second person plural, second aorist, indicative, active. These are all you alls here. So for once, Oki is right in style with the Bible. You saw in me, that word saw there comes from horao, that means to look at something like on a television screen or a movie screen or on the stage. Now I have seen some very famous people on stage. I saw Buck Owens on stage a lot of times and even talk to me when he was on stage and hand me things and send me notes and whatever. We send notes back and forth to each other when he was doing shows. And I saw Willie Nelson on stage at the Fox Theater. And I saw Neil Diamond on stage at the Rabble Bank Arena. Now, these are some of the famous people. Of course, I knew Buck Owens off stage. And I knew many of the country, Red Simpson, all of these people that were really country and western legends. I worked on their guitars or violins, and Marilyn sat down there and ate dinner with them, and Red Simpson used to just entertain you very well, didn't he?
Yes.
I'm a truck. Remember that song? He did some long ago. Saul, I saw you like on the stage, well-lidded stage. Many of the performers have dark glasses on. Have you noticed that?
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why they have dark glasses on. All those lights shining on them. And they'd be standing up there and sweating and sweating and sweating because the lights are hot. I'm standing here tonight. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lights on me. Then 9, 10, 11, 12. Shining upon me. A well lit, it means what you saw. Well lit. With defined character. These things you practice as a habit. Praethete. Second plural, present imperative active. And that comes from proso. And then chi, the little conjunction, page 208. And then ho theos, the God. Ho there is nominative singular masculine definite article. And theos ending with a O-S on the end of that. That tells you that's nominative singular masculine. God is masculine. And the God of peace. He is with you all. Again, He is with you. He not shall be with you, but He always is you with you. That word este there is third person singular future indicative middle. He's with you now and He's with you forever. For yourself and for Himself. Verse number 10 now. I hope you're enjoying these beautiful verses. Ekare. Day and Kyrio. Megalos. Hote. Ede. Pote. Anathalete. To heper. Emu. Phanein. Eth. Ho. Kai. Eth. Pronete. Ekai race day day. I guess that's the end of it. I rejoiced. I was called to rejoice. Actually, that's first person singular, second aorist, indicative passive. The passive voice means something that's done upon somebody. I was called to rejoice. Little weak adversity conjunction there, day, that actually starts the sentence. A kyrene, it says, I was called to enjoy, rejoice, but actually you look at it and grammatically as day as the beginning word or in this verse. Moreover, I was called to rejoice in the Lord. That word cheerio there means Jehovah. It means Jesus Christ. In the Lord. Greatly. Megalos. By the way, this word here is a little adverb. This megalos, it's only used one time in the New Testament, like in this form here. Hote, because. Ede, already. It's an adverb of time. And then another little interrogative particle here. When. Pote. Ye. Ye revived. The word here is anathalete. Anathalete in the spring. Now, right now, our trees up here are getting ready to go to sleep. And in the springtime, they will anathalete. They will bloom again. They will bloom. They will blossom. And that's what the word is here. It's like plants in the ground.
Anastasia.
Oh, yeah, Anastasia, but this is Anathalete. You bloomed again. You revived. You have revived your concern. All over again. The word there, it means you have blossomed again. Out here, we have some wild onions. We have some wild currants, and we also have some wild peppermint or mint. And in wintertime, it goes to sleep. But if the light and the spring comes on, it revives, it just jumps up and just starts shouting, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. I'm here, I'm here, I'm alive. to sprout again. On behalf of me, to think, to remember. That word phroneo there, that's one of the words for mind. This word, it means common sense. Horse sense. I used to say about Brother Madden, he had more horse sense than a herd of wild Mustangs. Because I've been around a lot of wild Mustangs. Pronoun. Present infinitive active. To think upon which indeed, that word chi there, now that's not a conjunction here, it's a particle of affirmation. On page 208 you can look it up in analytical Greek lexicon. And ye keep on thinking. Ephronete. Second person plural, imperfect, indicative, active, from phroneo. E kai reiste. You kept on not having a season. That word kairo is in this word. A kairo mai means not season. You didn't have a season. Second person plural, imperfect, indicative, middle voice. You didn't have a season for yourself, but weak adversative conjunction. Verse number 11 now. Uk hote kaf. Histed reason. Lego ego. Gar emathon. En hois. Eme atarkes. Ene. Not that according to need. Hysteresen. That word, our word hysterical comes from this. When a person is absolutely, when they feel abandoned, when they feel out of hope, they're hysterical. This word is lack of necessity. Two times in the New Testament that word is used. And then I say for I learned. I say there, first person singular, present indicative, active, I. That word ego there, that is a first person pronoun. It is nominative singular masculine first person pronoun. And you can go down all the eight cases. Singular and plural with this masculine, feminine, and neuter. But right here is nominative, singular, masculine, first person pronoun. And then gar, a little casual particle. Page 75. And imathon here is first person singular, second aorist indicative active from mathano. And what does the mathano or mathetes mean? Habitual learner. I learned, I repeatedly learned, habitually I learned. In what? Things, I am atarkes. This is a Stoic word, by the way. This atarkes. And then it says ene to be. Self-sufficient. It's an old adjective. Now this form here, there was a quotation from Socrates. And I know the Apostle Paul was thinking about this quotation. He that is content with least, for atarkeia is nature's wealth. His and has nature's wealth. He that is content with least has nature's wealth. Content with least has everything. Has everything. He that is content with least is satisfied with all things. I was thinking today, I look over here at this moment and I can see my grandfather as he stood with my grandmother, as he stood with me, in little photo. And I thought about my grandfather. My grandfather barely had necessities. He could not work. He went to World War I, Cherokee Indian. His family, their father had been shot down in the front of their face for trespassing on his own land because they gave it to a white boy, a white man. His son was out there with a shotgun, and when my grandfather got out of the wagon to open the fence to turn his cattle and goats and sheep into a pasture, they shot him. "Mr. Wilburn, you're trespassing." He said, "This is my land. I'm not siding any more trees. You don't keep them." So they shot and killed him. And yet still, my grandfather went into World War I. He went over there in World War I, got over there in Europe, and got the Spanish flu. It didn't kill him, but he may as well died in action because he came back and he never could work again. He could hardly walk across the room because his lungs were so destroyed. He barely had much of anything. My grandmother would go to bed at midnight at night, get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, be whistling, had the coffee on the old wood stove, and be ironing clothes and washing them. Her hands were always bleeding. She was a breadwinner of the home. My grandfather could not do anything. He'd go out in the fields and protect her. That's about all. My grandfather could hardly eat. He was 6'4". Tall Cherokee Indian. Bent and crippled from pain and lack of oxygen. He might eat a poached egg in the morning. He'd go out in the yard and what little fruit we had on the fruit trees, he'd get that and peel it and eat a little bit of that. And he drank his coffee. We ate beans, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, if we had anything. We ate beans. My grandfather was so sick that sometimes he couldn't even eat beans. He would eat a poached egg, that was all. We'd get eggs from our chickens. My grandmother would go out there and wring a chicken's neck and dip that, after she had washed clothes in the hot boiling water on a tub on a fire, she would dip the chicken in it and pull the feathers off the chicken and stuff pillows with the feathers, the short feathers. All slept in the same bed. My grandfather would get his little old 7-jewel Elgin watch every morning and rind it and look at it and put it back in his overalls. He never had much. After my grandfather died, my grandmother got married again, and this man had ability to work, and he worked hard. Louis Lamucci, Amadeo Lamucci. He was a chef, so he brought home a lot of food. We had never tasted steak or anything but beans. He brought home all kinds of Italian delicacies, and I went down there, and I saw all stuff on the table. I wouldn't believe all this food ever existed. My grandfather never got any of that at all. But he was very happy. He was happy. He was happy in his little shack that he built out of boards that floated down the canal. He nailed them together, crippled them together, little short boards, and they were all nailed on boards that were crippled together and nailed together because we didn't have one tall enough. We didn't have a door. He put a tarp, a flap up there. We didn't have running water. We didn't have electricity. We didn't have gas. We went out there and got buckets of water out of the canal and boiled that. But he was happy with what he had. He is happy with what he had. Being happy with what you have is real joy. Mm-hmm. Real joy. Because sometimes, you know, your life is fragile. My grandmother just fell apart when my grandfather died. But you know, in all reality, he was a burden to her, but he was her companion. And she leaned on him all the time, even though he couldn't do much. He built that little old shack with a hammer and nails and saw. I fell through the bottom of the outhouse one time because they had two holes up here and I fell down the thing. He fished me out of there, washed me off in the canal, And within a day or so, he had built a little bitty bench down there and put a hole in it so I wouldn't fall down the outhouse anymore. He did that. Suffering all the way. And I thought I was in hog heaven. All the time. I didn't know that other people had electricity and had, what is a water heater? Have you ever realized how precious a water heater is, or running water, or electricity, or a toilet? Every time we moved that outhouse, it took me, and I did a lot of work when I was a little kid. I went out there and dug a hole big enough to bury somebody in, and they moved the outhouse from one place to the other, and of course I covered it up with one else. A little old kid. And I'm talking about little. 2 or 3 years old, I was doing this. My grandfather gave me a job to do, and I did it, and I was just happy. Blisters all over my hands. I thought that's what every little kid did. Chopping wood and everything. We were happy. I was happy. I was happy when we got home out of the fields and we boiled those beans and we put them on a plate just steaming and boiling. They boiled them real hard because we didn't have any refrigeration. All these things that everybody out there takes for granted, we didn't have. But we had a piece of land that nobody was going to take away from us. We got. We had life every day. We woke up to the heat or to the cold. It didn't matter. And we learned to be happy in what state. Like Socrates said, a man that is happy in what state he is rich and has wealth of all the earth. 4 and verse 12. Oida kai ta penuse. Oida kai perise ud ein en ponte kai en pasin meri mi amai kai corteste kai panon kai periso ein kai hysterese. Another beautiful verse. I know thoroughly, and I see with my mind's eye, both to be humbled. To be caused to be humbled, that means thrown down in the dirt. And I know also to be in abundance. I know what it is to have enough to eat. I didn't. When I was young, I didn't know what it was like to have enough to eat. I did not know. I went to bed hungry and I got up hungry. And I ate one thing. Beans. 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 Beans like to ruin my intestinal tract. When Marilyn and I got married, I had to quit eating beans when I was about 30 years old. When Marilyn and I got married, she wanted me to eat beans and wanted me to drink coffee. I couldn't have either one of them. She was very unhappy with me. Wonder what kind of a cowboy didn't drink coffee. It bothered my heart. And the beans destroyed my colon. The first time she went in with me with a colonoscopy, she looked in there and she said, boy. And the doctor told her, he is very lucky to be alive. If it wasn't for his discipline, he wouldn't be here. Is that what he said, Marilyn? Mm-hmm. Yeah. This word means to overflow. My cup runneth over. That's what it means right there. And in all things, I have been initiated. I have been caused to be initiated. Look at that word, me, amai. This word here is the only place in the New Testament it's used. Now this word here, it is a first person singular perfect indicative passive. It's perfect tense. I have been initiated. I have been initiated into the secret rites. Around my life, in my life, I've been around a lot of Masonic Lodge people that have all these secret rites. I'm not saying anything bad about them, because many of the churches that I was a member of, almost every deacon in the church, sometimes the pastor, was a Masonic Lodge, a member of the Masonic Lodge. It means to be taught. It means cause to be learned secrets. To learn secrets. I have learned secrets. I have been initiated into the secrets. Both. And to be filled, to be stuffed. That means like to fatten an animal. And to starve. And to abound. To be in abundance, to overflow. And to be in necessity. Dire necessity. And to be in dire necessity. I've learned how to live in all these circumstances. Now this word, mem mi ai mai, that means to be taught in the secrets. Now, you go you go into the secret societies. Let's go back into the African jungle, into the Philippines and the Solomon Islands. You go into different parts, even in ancient Britain and Greece and South America, Mesoamerica. Many times, all of these leading men in the tribe would be initiated into rites. Even the American Indian people had initiation rites. They would be initiated into these secret rites, and if they went out there to do a task, if they went out to kill an enemy, or whatever, they would sit down, and many tribes had a potion, a powerful potion. Most of the time, it was a strong drug. And they would take this drug and they would go off on this journey, this expedition, this vision quest, so to speak. And they would load up on these drugs and make themselves powerful. Now, America had a conflict with the Philippines. And the Philippines, and even in Vietnam, the Vietnamese would go charging in at the sabotage, and they would take a lot of drugs. And many of the American soldiers would get initiated into these drugs. That happened so much in Vietnam. And they would go, and they would pray to their gods, or to their, what we might call, a ruler that was deity. Like the Japanese. They would go and they would take their sake or whatever, and then they'd go take and dive in to an airplane with a kamikaze airplane. Giving their lives, but having this supernatural strength. This supernatural strength. I remember one of my friends was a pagan at one time. He lived in the Solomon Islands. Jacob Busa. Jacob Busa was a sheriff of renown in his early life, around 1900 or in the late 1800s. He would go and he would pray to his God and he would take this potion, which would give him supernatural power, and he would go get somebody, he would go kill them, he would go take their heart out and eat it. And when they heard the name Jacob Busa that was coming after them, they were in terror because he got his man. It's kind of like the old Rooster Cogburn character in True Grit, which really was my great-great-grandfather, Sam Paul. He was deterrent to Indian. He was deterrent to crime in Indian territory. When they heard his name, they shuddered. Verse number 13, Panta Eskiel. Into endemente me. All things I am strong enough. Now he's borrowing from pagan culture here. When he's using these terms, these pagans out here, these were pagans at one time. He said, I have enough strength. I am empowered. I can all do all things through Christ, which empowers me. This word endemente, it is present participle active, dative singular masculine, or locative singular masculine, that is, that pours power into me, as in the Philippine jungles. America went over there in that conflict and they took 38 special pistols. 38 special would kill and stop almost anybody. They used 38 Smith & Wessons also in Europe. And the 38 caliber had a 200 grain bullet in it. And this would stop almost all people except if they were on drugs. Finally, in the Philippine conflict that America had, they had to invent another caliber, the 45 ACP, 230 grain bullet, that would stop them. It would literally stop them with their drugs. You have to shoot something that had knocked down power, so to speak. Force. Foot-pounds of destruction. Empowering me. As these pagans poured down these drugs, God empowers me and fills me up and overflowing with His power. I can do all things. I can meet any task that He's given to me. Paul said that he has the power from Jesus, and Jesus keeps on pouring in him the dynamis as long as he follows Jesus. Not drugs, no drugs needed. Paul had the power and strength of God. True Christianity and the power of God. True Christianity and the power of God. Verse number 14 now. Plain kalos. Epoi esate. Sig koi non esantes. Mu te thelise. Nevertheless, that word plain there, that's a little adverb. Comes from polis. Page 335. And polis is on 328. And then the word well, adverb there, describes the following action. Nevertheless, ye worked out. Second person plural again, you all did. First there is indicative active. That word poiesate. That word, our word poem comes from that word. That make words, to work to make words rhyme. And writing a poem is a job. Having had in common, sig koi non nesantes. First aorist, participle active, nominative plural masculine. Having in common with me all of the tribulation and affliction, that word thelepse. Over in the Middle East, especially in Afghanistan right now, a lot of people are under thelepse. They're under great terror and pressure and tribulation. We've all gone through some tribulation in our life, but this is tribulation unto death. And Paul was facing it, tribulation unto death. Verse number 15, oidate de kai himes, phile pe se oi, hote en arke, tu euangelio hote, exelthon, apo Macedonios Udamia. Moi Ecclesia Ekoinestinsen Ace Logon Dosios Kai Lepsios A me himes Monoi. That's a long verse. Oidati, I want you to understand completely. You know, and having known, second person plural, perfect indicative acting. Having known thoroughly also ye Philippians, that in the beginning of the gospel, when I went out from Macedonia, no one, me, not one single church, it shared with me. They didn't share with me their, what we might call, their earthly wealth. In the matter, ace legone, that means on record. That actually means an account book. That means I didn't have a bank account with them. I didn't have a checkbook with them. A checkbook of giving and receiving. When you give to God's work, God will bless you You're not going to give a dollar and get $500 in return. I'm not talking about the prosperity gospel now. But when you give to missionaries, when you give to your minister of choice or whatever, your church of choice, God uses that and you are blessed in hearing more of it and keeping it going. It means giving and receiving. Except you all, he said. Paul uses a mercantile metaphor, a market metaphor, and repeated it in verse number 17 also. Eis logon himon. Not even Antioch contributed anything but good wishes and prayers to Paul in Acts 13, 1, 2, 3. Now that's where we're going to quit for tonight. Right there. That's quite a message, isn't it? It wasn't mine. It's God's message. That's God's message through Paul. He wrote this letter to that church, but it is instruction for us all over the world, wherever you are, whether it's Nancy in Pennsylvania or Donald Grewar in Wales or wherever you are. Kathy and Steve Caldwell, Brett Johnson in Bakersfield, Mark Havens in New York, all of our students in the Philippines, in the South Pacific, the Solomon Islands, New Zealand and Australia, all of this is to us today, all where we are in the world. And those behind the Islamic curtain, I see the downloads from all over the world over there behind the iron Islamic curtain. God wrote this letter for you too, and for me. This little church here for us. Father, please use these words, your words, to bless lives, encourage lives, and to give them the strength that they need to meet all obstacles, especially the obstacle we're living in today in this country. Please help us. Please use this message to glorify yourself and your